Greetings, you're listening to Christian Radio WYYC, York, Pennsylvania, presenting the 15 minutes of the End Time Matrix, hosted by CephasMinistry.com, P.O. Box 35-1944, Westminster, Colorado, 80035. Phone is 303-452-1104. Your host is Rita Williams. People always ask, what does the word Cephas mean and how do you spell it? Read John 1 verse 42 and 1 Peter chapter 2 verse 5. The Bible states, Cephas represents a stone. Cephas is spelled C-E-P-H-A-S. C like in Charles, E like in Erna, P like in Paul, H as in Hunt, A as in Alpha, and S as in Sam. The reason I bring up the preliminaries again is not to bore you, but to let newcomers know what this program is about. Matrix is most likely another unfamiliar concept if listeners have not seen the movie Matrix. Webster's Dictionary states the following: Matrix is something like a mold or a womb that gives form, foundation, or origin to something else enclosed inside of it. Matrix can apply to many concepts. Take a womb, for instance, in which a baby is conceived. The mother's body nourishes the growing child but has no idea what kind of individual the child is going to be once it is outside of the womb. This program will be about exposing the matrix, the something that is inside the matrix. The listeners to this program who may or may not be caught up in the matrix. Your eternal life could be in jeopardy if you don't pay close attention to this program. It will be packed with information that you need to know to see if you are the something that is inside the matrix. The programs will be downloadable at cephas-radio.com. The reason for this broadcast is Pope Francis. He suddenly came on the scene and, seemingly like a messiah, attracts people of faith, interfaith, Hollywood, media, and even atheists to himself like no other pope has before. Why is that? Who is Pope Francis? I'll get to that later. To help you understand why we are where we are today, I have to go back in history to show the undercurrent that may pull people suddenly into the abyss. Even though Francis tells people that he doesn't have much time left before he will die, he travels from one country to another. To his own amazement, he is greeted by thousands expressing euphoria. Many are moved to tears, hoping he will be an acting savior, even though his message is about worldly issues like global warming, poverty, intolerance, and climate change. Most believers are pro-Israel. Pope Francis is pro-Palestinians who are Muslims. What I have noticed recently, Christians seem to go the same way. Why are they moving in the direction of Islam? Do listeners know that Christianity and Islam have developed a new movement named Chrislam? In spite of the fact that Christians are taught in 2 Corinthians chapter 6 verse 15, and what concord has Christ with Belial? Or what part has he that believeth in an infidel? In one of the last books of the Old Testament, the book of Zechariah, chapter 2, verse 1 through 13, King James Version, the prophet describes what God told him, summarized.
God has given his people a tremendous task in this world. And all need wisdom carefully to search out the mystery of iniquity. In the very time in which we live, the Lord has called us people and has given them a message to bear. He has called them to expose the wickedness of the man of sin. Testimonies to Ministers 118. And in Great Controversy 606 we read, the sins of Babylon will be laid open. The fearful results of enforcing the observances of the church by civil authority. The inroads of spiritualism. The stealthy but rapid progress of papal power. All will be unmasked, and by these thousands who have never heard words like these before will be stirred. In the ancient world, the ancient system of pagan idolatry gave place to the monstrous cathedrals that exist in Europe today. But still on these cathedrals, we see remnants of the origin of this system. Spain reached a tremendous climax during the 15th and 16th century in her colonies around the world. And we see in Spain the great power of the Catholic Church. It was in Spain that the Inquisition was set up with a tremendous power. 68 million people were destroyed there alone. The early Christians had spent many years suffering at the hands of persecution, and as the church became corrupt, they separated. We find in the history of the Waldenses by Wiley and the Waldenses by Claudiana, a book written in Rome, that the early Christians who wanted to stay pure and stay faithful to the apostolic faith removed themselves into the mountains and the remote areas of Europe, and there they raised their families. But even there, the armies of Rome found them. The church was now the destroyer, and some of the most horrible scenes in the history of the world took place at that time. These people tried to have religious freedom. They worshipped in groves and trees and in caves of the earth, but even there, the long arm of Rome found them. Their valleys were fairly silent just before the time of Martin Luther. But when they heard of the great Reformation that was taking place in Germany and in Switzerland, they sent representatives and they joined the Reformation, and a tremendous movement took place against the power of Rome. And so Satan moved. In Great Controversy 2:34 we read, at this time the order of the Jesuits was created, the most cruel, unscrupulous, and powerful of all the champions of popery. Cut off from earthly ties and human interests, dead to the claims of natural affections, reason and conscious holy silence, they knew no rule, no tie, but that of their order, and no duty but to extend its power. There was no crime too great for them to commit, no deception too base for them to practice, no disguise too difficult for them to assume. Vowed to perpetual poverty and humility, it was their studied aim to secure wealth and power to be developed to the overthrow of Protestantism and the reestablishment of the papal supremacy. When appearing as members of their order, they wore a garb of sanctity, but under the blameless exterior, the most criminal and deadly purposes were often concealed. It was a fundamental principle of the order that the end justifies the means. By this code, lying, theft, perjury, assassination were not only pardonable, but commendable when they served the interests of the church. In the Power of the Jesuits by Philip Miller and this book, The Jesuit, Their Spiritual Doctrine and Practice, we get a history of the Jesuit order. We find that Inigo, the father of the order, was born in the Valley of Loyola in northern Spain. Here he was born to a wealthy family. There today is a tremendous monastery to the Jesuits and a magnificent chapel illustrating how much they honored this man and the wealth of that order. The castle next to it is where Ignatius was born. Ignatius, as a young man, was a violent, brutish sort. The police records of the day said violent, vindictive, and dangerous. He was a proud young man and involved himself in many of the sins and evils of the day. He wanted to be a great commander. But unfortunately, in a battle with the French in Pamplona, he shattered his leg. And now his plans for the future as a great warrior were ended. There, while he was recuperating, he read books about the saints and about Jesus. These were fanciful books about the saints, about the miracles and the things they could do. He envisioned Christ as a great commander. And now he, as a saint, would capture the world for Jesus Christ. He had had a nervous breakdown, and this concept illustrated the condition that his mind was in. Now, as a cripple, he made his way all the way across Spain to the mountains of Montserrat. There was an ancient sanctuary there, and in that sanctuary was housed a very sacred image to the Catholic Church. This image was called the Black Virgin of Montserrat. In this church, Ignatius spent 3 days making confession and spent an entire night standing before this virgin statue as a knight in a vigil. He committed himself to the baby, Jesus, and to Mary. And from there he determined to go to Jerusalem. And there in Jerusalem he determined that he would conquer the Muslim world for Jesus Christ. All the powers of Rome couldn't do it, and now he would do it. On his way, he found he couldn't go because Barcelona had the plague. And so he had to stay in this little town called Manresa for 10 months. There in that town, as we arrived there, we found a monstrous institution of the Jesuits built over the place where Ignatius stayed there. It was a cave. 10 months in the cave, he tortured his body and his mind until, in exhaustion, he began to have dreams and visions. He claimed that the secret doctrine of the Catholic Church was taught to him in this place. In his eye, he saw lights flashing. And he believed that Mary came in the form of a light in Jesus. And he believed that he saw Satan in a spiral of light eyes before him. He believed that he had chased Satan around like a dog with a stick and many other fanciful concepts, but he claimed that these teachings he received there were the foundation of his entire movement. And it's here he began the spiritual exercises of Ignatius. These were experiences that a master Jesuit would bring novices through, would bring other people through, to give them the same kind of mind that Ignatius developed through his experience. They were brought through these experiences just like music on a sheet. For 30 days, they were told what to think, how to feel, when to groan and when to sigh, what to imagine, and they were to cut off all normal human emotion throughout those experiences. Ignatius finally made his way to Jerusalem, but there the Franciscan monks told him to go home. We don't want any political trouble here in the Muslim Empire. We've had enough of that. So making his way back to the port of Barcelona, Ignatius sat with little children learning the rudiments of Latin in order to study. From there he made his way to the little college in the town of Alcala, north of Madrid. Here at the Colegio Mayor, he began his studies in theology. While he was there, he gathered a little group of men and women around him and began to bring them through his mental exercises. They would faint and fall aside. They would scream and pass out. Friends, this is demonic activity that this man was involved in, even in his early history. Ignatius was known for the rest of his life for his mystic powers. In Occult Theocracy by Lady Queensborough and Secret Societies of All Ages by Heckethorn, we learned that at the time there was an organization called the Alumbrado, or the Illuminati, in Spain. The Inquisition determined that Ignatius had been a member of this occult intellectual society and threw him in the jail there at the Inquisition. Upon his release, he made his way to Salamanca, to the great university there, but again he was brought under suspicion of being an Illuminist, and he was thrown in the Inquisition again. Now, upon being released, he made his way to the great University of Paris in France, and there he gathered intelligent young men around him, brought them under the control of the power of his mind, and these became the basis of his society. Not too far from the university, they dedicated themselves to the new order of the Jesuits there in Montmartre. Today there's a tremendous chapel on Montmartre, one of the most magnificent chapels that we saw while we were in Europe, and it's dedicated to the destruction of democracy and liberty in the world. Ignatius from there made his way to Rome, and in time he was accepted by the Pope. The Reformation had destroyed the influence of the church in many parts of Europe. In the book, The Ignatian Fireworks, or Fiery Jesuits, published in 1667, it's right here in the vaults at PUC if you want to read it, we read the aged gentleman, Paul III, who then sat in the infallible chair, foreseeing the need the papacy had of incendiaries to vex the enemies to its grandeur, easily grants the petition of Ignatius and his decemvirs, prostrate at his holiness's feet, where after sweet kisses in token of their obedience, they receive an institution of their predominant sect.